For Antiwar.com, I'm Scott Horton. This is Antiwar Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. It's Antiwar Radio on Chaos 95.9 FM in Austin, Texas. I'm happy to welcome back to the show independent journalist Greg Palast. He's the author of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, An Armed Madhouse. And, geez, I think I got the new DVD somewhere around here. It's called Palast Investigates. It's gripping and provocative and inspiring, says John Perkins, author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And, of course, you see him on BBC Newsnight, on Democracy Now, sometimes writing in Harper's Magazine and other places like that. Welcome back to the show, Greg. How are you doing?
Glad to be with you, Scott. I feel gripped and excited.
Well, I'm really happy to have you here. And I brought you on because you're always the master of the politics of the American empire as it interacts with the governments of Latin America.
Just
so to
the
speak,
fact, ma'am. Just a reporter.
Right, right. Well, but that's something that you do report on and are very well versed in, and it's something that I'm really lacking in. So I'm really happy to have you here. I think probably everybody heard about the war of words, such as it is, between Hugo Chavez, the president of Venezuela, and some people in the Colombian government. Saying that, I guess Chavez accused them of they're preparing for war against us, so we need to be prepared for war against them, he said. Well, obviously there's a ton of backstory there, and I don't know what it is, Greg, so why don't you tell me what it is?
Well, I should mention, of course, that I know Hugo Chavez relatively well. I've interviewed him many times, and he's a fan of my work, but I just so you know, I never become friends with politicians because I think it's dangerous business for a reporter. And I also know the other belligerent in this tussle, which is Ecuador on the southern border of Colombia, where I know the president, Rafael Correa. I've not had the pleasure of meeting President Uribe, which is a mixed pleasure. What's going on here? First of all, I mean, let's remember, there's a lot of domestic politics. And despite what the New York Times says, Venezuela is a very democratic country. That is, Hugo Chavez is fighting to get reelected, and he's got to do it in a two-step. He's got to get himself the constitution changed so he can get a third term. But unlike Mayor Bloomberg of New York, he's actually believes that the people should be allowed to vote on that. Unlike the authoritarian government in Gotham in the USA. So he's got to win that vote. And remember, despite the statements that, you know, he's a dictator, he lost the last vote on this matter by 0.5%. Not usually how dictators, give up election counts.
Well, and he's been elected, Florida. Just on this one small point, he's been elected, what, three times now or twice now?
Two times, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's gone through three elections. Well, actually, one was in effect a recall that he won. But what's happened is, so he's got a domestic audience to play to, and there's a long-term enmity between Colombia and Venezuela. That's why I bring that up. In other words, very frankly, it's kind of like, Bush, kicking around the French or something. I mean, or other greater rivalries, you know, attacking the Russians or something. You can't lose a vote in Venezuela by, spitting on the Colombians. And in Colombia, you can't lose any votes by spitting on the Venezuelans. And it has nothing to do with Chavez or Uribe. This is a centuries-long enmity. The same with Ecuador and Colombia. Now, Rafael Correa is an ally of Hugo Chavez. Chavez kept his country, kept Correa's Ecuador afloat with goodies, roughly, I've estimated about $250 million when Ecuador was in trouble. By the way, Correa is always very sensitive about that because he doesn't like to be seen as Hugo Chavez's, little cousin that has to be helped out. But that's just the darn truth. And if you remember, besides the politics, now I've told you the internal politics, which is everyone's looking to get reelected, Correa and Uribe and Chavez, so they are, Colombia's banging them, they're banging Colombia. But beyond the BS, which is why, by the way, because of the major political BS factor. I don't believe that we could have a war there. But one must be careful, because Colombia last year did invade Ecuador under the excuse that they were chasing down guerrillas. And so they invaded Ecuador, and it was only when Venezuela moved its quite substantial army to the Colombian border that Colombia withdrew from Ecuador. It was just an outrageous incursion.
So, Greg, then Venezuela and Ecuador have an alliance, an official one, or?
They have a friendship. They don't have an official signed alliance because of Ecuador's dislike of being seen again as the junior partner of Venezuela, which is far bigger, far more powerful,
right,
and far richer. So they don't like to have too many formal alliances. But they obviously are very locked up together. Now, what is surprising and stunning and just deeply disappointing to me, in fact, if you go to gregpalace.com, you'll see my comments on this, during the invasion of Ecuador by Colombia, which is that Barack Obama, for some reason, has decided to step into George Bush's muddy boots in Colombia. And instead of throttling back what is called Plan Colombia, has increased the heat.
Well, now, what is Plan Colombia, and what does Vice President Joe Biden have to do with it?
Okay, what Plan Colombia is supposedly our military economic support for Colombia to defeat drug dealers, cocaine dealers in Colombia, and to defeat a left-wing guerrilla insurgency in Colombia. So we're, apparently, which is very interesting, that they've kind of added, actually that's an expansion of, let's talk about mission creep, it's a creepy new mission. Because I have to say, George Bush only, actually never talked about fighting the guerrillas. George Bush was actually quite careful to say that we were only fighting drug lords in Colombia. It seems that Obama's actually increased it to actually put ourselves on the side of the kind of crypto-fascist death squad sponsoring Colombian government.
Well, now the rebels there, they control a huge area, right? I think I remember back in the 90s they said that FARC controlled an area the size of Switzerland. This is almost
right.
A breakaway state. This is not just some rebels hiding out in a neighborhood somewhere.
That's correct. Now, they've been substantially hurt by the Colombian military. And very frankly, despite what we hear, the government of Ecuador does not support the FARC. They don't want a renegade force on their borders. The government of Hugo Chavez does not support the FARC, despite everything that I hear. And in fact, one of the ridiculous things was that it was reported endlessly in the U.S. press that there was a computer found in the jungle. This is a laugh. A computer found in the jungle when Batancourt and other hostages held by the FARC were sprung. That they found a computer of the leaders of FARC with messages from Hugo Chavez saying, you know, I'm sending you a quarter, you know, $250 million and guns, etc. And this was presented by the New York Times, by the Wall Street Journal, by every paper in the U.S., CNN, that here was the evidence that Hugo Chavez was backing this guerrilla army overthrowing an elected government in Colombia. But whether I think much of the Uribe government or not doesn't matter. They are also an elected government. Chavez, I actually read the memos in Spanish, and there is nothing, zero, zero, zero about Chavez giving the FARC money or guns. Clearly they are referring to someone who is not Hugo Chavez. The Colombian military says that a code name in there refers to Chavez, and they were referring to a number. They were literally referring very clearly to a hostage exchange with the Colombian government, which had nothing to do with Chavez whatsoever. So it's a complete canard. And what is stunning to me is that the Obama administration has taken on the same game, using the same words, the belligerence against the elected government of Venezuela. Very important is the belligerence against the government of Ecuador, which really does not want to fight with the U.S. One-third of Ecuador's population lives in the USA due to their what had been a terrible economy. Just so you know, and this is a very emotional story, when I spoke to the president, Correa, his father was a drug mule who was in prison in Texas. And he grew up impoverished in the streets of Quito and, worked his way through smarts to the Sorbonne, and then he became an economics professor at the University of Illinois in the USA just before he became finance minister and president. And he is an American citizen when he was elected president of Ecuador. You know, he really wants to be close to America. And Obama, every time he puts out his hand, you know, Obama's line is to Muslims, we'll put out our hand as long as you don't slap it back. Well, Correa's put out his hand to Obama, and he's got it like his finger snapped off. You know, and part of it is because we demand that Correa maintain the United States' only military base in South America is at the beach at Manta in Ecuador, and we want to maintain that military base.
Well, and that's what got him in trouble, right? Is he told George Bush that, sure, you can keep your base here as long as you let the Ecuadorian military build a military base in Florida.
Exactly. You know, set us up at Disney World. You know, it's insane to have this old gunboat type of a kind of leased Guantanamo in Ecuador. It's insulting to Ecuadorians. It's you know, we should have good relations and commerce with the nation of Ecuador. Instead, we are involving them in a new south of the border Cold War with Hugo Chavez. And by the way, if you're wondering what this is all about, why are we doing this, right? You know, the simple reason, why are we doing this? You know, you've used the
term. Well, it's got to be because of to prevent Americans from being able to purchase cocaine on the market, right?
Well, right. We want to establish our source of cocaine, right? But our strategic supply. It's all about that four-letter word, oil, O-I-L. I call it the four-letter word because that's what it really is, and because we're getting greased. Okay.
Well, let me stop you right there and put some words in your mouth, and you can fix them however you like and finish your statement however you like. But if I remember your reporting correctly from 2002, the reason that there was this somewhat USAID, CIA-supported coup in Venezuela, I'm not exactly sure about the details there, but the Bush administration went on TV and congratulated the coup leaders and whatever in 2002. And if I remember right, you said this is because the NSA overheard Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi talk about trying to drop the price of oil by a couple of bucks a barrel. And that was the reason that there was a coup in Venezuela, Greg?
Well, yes, there was discussion with Gaddafi over supplies of oil. We've always used Venezuela as Gaddafi's talking about establishing a new embargo. Venezuela's always been the embargo breaker. Chavez said, actually, interestingly enough, Chavez tried to get the word to the U.S. that despite the tensions with Bush, that he would actually break an embargo. Just so you know, Chavez told me that. He actually tried to preempt the coup. Just say, look, not because he was going to give in, but he actually did not want to politicize oil. You know, his nation needs that revenue flow. The idea, by the way, that's another canard put out by the Republicans, and then Obama picked it up, as well as Bush, obviously, which is that Chavez at any moment could cut off our supply of oil. They are the number one provider of oil into Houston, into the Houston Ship Channel, okay, which is designed to refine Venezuela's heavy crude, not the Saudi stuff. So if we lost Venezuela, it would be a problem. But if Venezuela lost America, it would be a problem to them. You know, you have to understand is that Chavez is not hunting for a war with the United States. He was really hoping that there'd be something new with Obama. The problem is that Obama's president, but he's only president of the United States. He's not president of an oil company. And it's still oil that rules. So understand, if you see the film Palace Investigates, where I'm in Ecuador with the president of Ecuador, or with Chavez, in the film Assassination of Hugo Chavez, you'll see that the issue with Ecuador is that Chevron has been kicked out of Ecuador, and they are now being sued for $27 billion. For destroying the Amazon. I was down there. I saw those kids dying. I mean, I saw kids who were dying of cancer from the oil there, all right? And Ecuador wants that fixed. Ecuador also threw out Occidental Petroleum, which was trying to manipulate the production and marketing and suppress
Oh, Occidental, that's Al Gore's posse right there.
Right.
Al Gore, I always had a theory, Greg, that if Al Gore had won in 2000, then they would have blamed September 11th on the FARC. And then right. And then the whole war on terror would have been in South America.
Well, you know, you got to kick someone, right? And the problem is that, so what the U.S. wants, is the U.S. wants to, has been wanting, not the U.S., but the U.S. oil companies, with, unfortunately, the continuing connivance of who's ever in power in Washington, to turn Ecuador into an oil colony. And they're very resentful that what Ecuador has done is said, well, we're just going to have agreements to refine our oil with Venezuela, and we'll ship our oil to China, which, by the way, China has offered to take over the U.S. military base at Manta, not for military, but to create a shipping center. You know, and believe me, the president told me if the U.S. would offer me a shipping center, a commercial center, instead of a military base, we'd be thrilled to have America have a big lease and production facility there.
I always get such a kick out of socialists trying to teach capitalist economics to the United States of America. Isn't it great?
Well, but see, there's capitalism and capitalism. Remember, oil capitalism is not about, see, capitalism that the socialists expect capitalists to have are buying and selling and trading in fair markets. Oil capitalism is about taking it. About, they're used to corrupt Ecuadorian governments that they can buy off and get the resources for nothing, sweep away the natives, and those that aren't there, you dump your toxic crap on them. That's what they want to do with Ecuador. With Venezuela, they want to make sure that Chavez is turning over the oil fields cheap. He's got, you know, as you know, Scott, according to the documents I have from the Department of Energy, they say that Chavez has the largest oil reserves in the world, that is Venezuela, not Saudi Arabia.
If the price is high enough.
Now, this is the interesting thing. If the price is high enough, at least $50 a barrel, because it's heavy crude, it's expensive to produce. So there's this, we want to have control. There's a split, by the way, within the oil community. Exxon despises Venezuela. Chevron despises Ecuador, but plays ball with Venezuela because they want those reserves. Shell Oil wants those reserves. BP wants those reserves. But Exxon, which has tremendous, of course, influence in the U.S. government, is trying to, you know, undermine Chavez. And, in fact, the last thing that these guys want, just so you know, the last thing they want is to have Chavez release a ton of oil into the market and knock down the price. Let's not forget, they're, you know, the higher the price of oil, the more money these guys make. Let's not kid ourselves. So what we've moved from is a discussion of kind of political saber rattling between the three Latin nations of Ecuador, Venezuela, and Colombia. And behind it all is this war over the control of oil. And the problem is that when oil is involved, saber rattling, which may be for political purposes, can suddenly become a very hot war if people are provoked.
That's right. This is playing with fire here. And for people who tuned in late and didn't hear the beginning, it's Greg Palast from BBC Newsnight. And what we're talking about is all the saber rattling back and forth between Colombia and Venezuela and how it's all for domestic political concerns, just like when George Bush threatens Iran, I guess, or that kind of thing. And yet, this is the kind of thing that absolutely can lead to tens of thousands or more people being killed. This is not playing around. This is states with war powers making these threats.
Yes. And the problem is we are arming Colombia to the teeth. And then we complain when Venezuela... Now, keep in mind, Colombia... Let's not forget, Colombia did invade Ecuador last year. So this is no joke in the sense of that Venezuela has every reason to arm itself because these guys, if they didn't, there's no question that Colombia would roll across the border using the same old excuse. They're chasing the FARC or they're chasing drug dealers or something of that order. And so Chavez has good reason to say we're going to confront you and we're not going to back down. You're not going to encroach in our land. And I think if this is one of the problems. I mean, Chavez had offered to help negotiated a deal between the FARC and the government and offered to negotiate the release of hostages, and that was killed off by the Colombian government. They prefer the belligerents. They prefer the saber rattling, and they prefer when they can get away with it, as in the case of Ecuador, actually, you know, invasion. And again, Colombia, which is also developing its own oil resources, it becomes an issue of who controls the oil moving out of the area. Obviously, Colombia would like to, if you can keep Venezuela at arms and in a belligerent stance, you're going to reduce its political role and you're going to reduce its attractiveness to oil exploration. Mm-hmm. Same with Ecuador.
Well, now, help me understand, Greg, what is it that is Hugo Chavez's great sin? I think we talked before about how he took his money out of the Federal Reserve and he decided to act as his own little mini IMF.
That's
and
right.
Make loans, not in an exploitative economic hitman way, but just, here, you need loans, and kind of served as a not evil IMF to the other countries of South America, that kind of thing. But you say he cooperates with the oil companies. He has no interest in trying to get into a real conflict with the United States of America. Why does Charles Krauthammer hate him so much? I mean, what is the big deal here?
When I say that he cooperates with the oil companies, keep in mind that he changed the state of Alaska did in Sarah Palin, he changed the terms of the contracts with the oil companies when the price of oil went up.
Oh, if he's as socialistic as Sarah Palin, that could be a problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't change the contracts unilaterally or as radically as Palin did in Alaska, but he did change the contracts as every leader who wasn't bribed did. Okay, you have to understand that, you know, yes. In Kazakhstan, they didn't necessarily change all the terms, but, you know, that, you know, there was also $160 million bribe paid to the to Nursultan Nazarbayev, the president. Now, Chavez, no one has said. In fact, I've talked to oil company guys. Said the one, you know, it's almost a frustration that there's no one to pay bribes to in Venezuela. So they know that, therefore, they have to pay into the public treasury. So there is conflicts with the oil companies, but it's basically over price. It's over ownership of the oil resources, who actually owns them. And ownership, and this is very important, you hit on something very important, control of the petrodollars that come from this. In other words, for decades, all the money that went to Venezuela came back to New York and Miami, went through the elite or through the government. Either the government put its money in the U.S. Federal Reserve, and the elites that made the money from the oil put it into Miami. And Chavez ended that. He took the money out of the Federal Reserve, created his own Bank of the South, and lends money into Latin America at a much more favorable rate than Ecuador or other nations can get from the IMF. So I have to say that Venezuela has actually made quite a pile off that. You know, in fact, one Wall Street Journal reporter was complaining that Chavez has actually made a fortune off his loans to Latin America. But, of course, the Latin Americans are grateful because they're not paying the usurious New York rates. So Chavez has interrupted the usual game with oil, the usual game with capital. And, you know, I mean, he's not Jesus on a pogo stick. I have some of my problems. You know, he gets quite often quite filled with himself at moments and overreaches. He closed a radio station, a TV station, which I think was a big mistake, though most media there is very much in opposition to him, and he hasn't touched most opposition TV or radio. But, you know, he's no miracle man, but he's actually taken a very progressive view, saying that our oil is ours, our capital is ours. Ecuador is taking the same stance, and he's protecting them. And Colombia is basically saying, we will do the bidding of the U.S. oil companies and, in effect, give the U.S. a military base for the control of South America, which you're losing with Ecuador.
Hmm. Well, now, and we've talked about before how in Colombia, there never were private property owners who were entrepreneurs who went out there and put down their own money and speculated and did hard work and found oil. This oil has always been owned by the national government. It's just that it used to only go to the whitest people and the American bondholder, the whole U.S. securities scam. Now it's going to the people of
Venezuela.
Right. In Venezuela, that's right.
So I just want to ask you real quick, and if you can't give me a short answer, that's okay. We'll save it till next time. But your top blog entry today at gregpalace.com is about how the war against the Taliban is not about September 11th, because they didn't do September 11th. Al-Qaeda did, and Al-Qaeda, they planned the thing in Germany, et cetera, like that. You don't need a base and all that great stuff. But here's my question for you, and I don't think I ever get a real satisfactory answer. What the hell is this war about? A lot of people say, for example, it's about making sure that there's not a pipeline from Iran to China. Something like that. If we can stir up all these hillbillies and keep them destabilized and killing each other, then it's, you know, that's score one for the empire or something. What's in your best reporting or your most educated opinion, Greg, can you tell me why is America occupying Afghanistan?
You know what? If you read my report, Taliban equals 9/11, you know, baloney, you will see that's one of the few times I'm usually pretty glib, in which I don't have the answer. I want this, but I hope that Obama does. And if he's telling us we're there because this cockamamie line that we are going to be attacked again, that first of all, that September 11th was planned in Afghanistan. It was planned in Hamburg, Sarasota, and Sarasota, Florida. You know, neither places which we are bombing or occupying, though maybe they deserve it. But it has nothing. 9/11 and Taliban are completely different things. They're horrible, nasty, turban Nazis, absolutely. But they are. But you can't really say they're guilty of the 9/11 attack. I'm sorry, they weren't. They did harbor and associate with Bin Laden, who ain't there anymore. And if we get attacked again, it's not going to be from the caves of Tora Bora. The funding and operation of Al-Qaeda was laid out in the Hotel Monceau in a meeting in Paris. Okay, this is where these guys meet. You have to understand, these are millionaires and billionaires involved in these operations. They don't hang out in caves. And so if we're there to stop Al-Qaeda's next attack on Cleveland from Tora Bora, Mr. Obama, you better come up with something better than that one if our kids are going there. And I can't really even, it seems so inscrutable at this moment. I don't want to be glib about what I think it is. You know, there's a great game, there's obviously oil and resources involved, but, you know, I can't read through this incredible fog. I just know what it isn't, which is the official line that the next attack will come from Tora Bora, the Swat Valley, and the Taliban are somehow involved in figuring out how to take out Los Angeles.
Yeah.
That ain't happening. They didn't do it in the first place. They aren't doing it now.
Boy, and I hope not L.A., right?
Yeah, not, well, yeah, let's
okay, everybody,
you know, we shouldn't put that up to a vote in America.
Yeah, but yeah, definitely not. Way, yeah, democracy, man, God, yeah. Failed. Okay, everybody, that's Greg Palast, BBC TV, Democracy Now!, the best democracy money can buy, and our madhouse are the books, and the new DVD is called Palast Investigates. The website is gregpalast.com, and including a footnote for you here on some of the discussion earlier, $300 million from Chavez to FARC, a fake. Very important story here. Thanks very much for your time on the show today, Greg. Appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks, Scott. Bye.